police dramas have been a mainstay of American television for decades. Shows like NCIS and CSI routinely depict the labor of investigators, detectives, and forensic scientists as they search tirelessly for the killer of that week's fictional victim. And it's all wrapped up in a tidy bow in less than an hour. Real-life police investigations don't follow such a smooth script. Law enforcement agencies across the country often deal with backlogs, including murder cases. Now, a new study from Michigan State University shed some light on how a few U.S. cities are clearing their homicide files. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me now to explain. Kevin, who's written this particular piece of nonfiction?
Murder He Wrote, maybe you could call it.
I guess.
That would be Dr. David Carter. He is a criminologist at MSU and a former Kansas City, Missouri police officer. He and his son Jeremy, who's a researcher at Indiana University, studied seven cities who have cleared or solved at least 80% of their homicide cases. Their work appears in this month's issue of the journal called Homicide Studies. So I asked Dr. Carter how he came to study unsolved murder investigations.
I was director of two projects for the Justice Department in two jurisdictions, which unfortunately I can't name, that had very high homicide rates and very low clearance rates. In both of these jurisdictions, major cities, we found a number of things that the police were doing that did not work. And so the Bureau of Justice Assistance said, we know what doesn't work. Let's see what does work. And so as a result, BJA and us identified the seven cities that had clearance rates of 80% or higher for a five-year period. And we went to see how they were doing. Agencies that have 80% clearance rates are doing something very right.
Well, before we get into the specific examples of these seven cities, I wanted to ask you about how a homicide investigator launches a probe into an unsolved murder. Now, all of us have seen our share of these police procedural dramas on TV.
Mm-hmm.
There is no shortage of them, but that by no means makes any of us laymen qualified to to give an opinion on that. Is there really a standardized way of approaching a murder investigation, especially in sort of that golden window of 48 to 72 hours after it happens?
Well, yes and no. And I say yes and no because there's the standard way, but what we found in a study is how that probably needs to be changed. Historically, what would happen is the police receive a call about a potential homicide. That call is answered by a uniformed officer, a patrol officer. Again, historically, what happens, patrol officers respond, and their core role is to, quote-unquote, protect the scene. They're trying to identify witnesses and keep them there, trying to protect the evidence of the scene and wait for the crime scene investigators and criminal investigators to come. Crime scene investigators being the people who collect the forensics. Wait for them to arrive and to begin the process. After that, historically it was just basically a dogged investigation. Let's track down the leads. What are we learning? How are we doing? The first 48 hours is critical. Because of the evidence is fresh, memories of witnesses are fresh, and the likelihood that the offender has got very far is low. Interestingly, kind of a side note on that, one of the things that we did in this study was find out what our successful agencies did during that first 48 hours and identified, I think, 97 separate tasks that they actually do during that first 48 hours. But that model is changing based upon our study.
Can you think of one or two of those 97 that are
Well, there's a lot of them, and one of them, which is significant for the study, is to have the patrol officers, who are the first responders, not just protect the scene, but take an active role in beginning the investigation, including interviewing witnesses, identifying evidence, recording people potential who may have been at the scene. And oddly enough, that frequently wasn't done, certainly not the interviewing of witnesses. And so there's a lot of different tasks that, again, individually may seem mundane, but collectively they really have an impact on the change of a homicide investigation.
We're talking with Dr. David Carter. He is a professor in the School of Criminal Justice at Michigan State University, also the director of the intelligence program at MSU. Let's talk a bit about some of these cities that you surveyed. They had varying success rates. One in particular, San Diego, had a 100% unsolved murder clearance rate. This is going back to 2011. So in that particular year, 2011, that city was able to completely fill in their backlog of unsolved murders. In a nutshell, is there a way to describe really how that happened?
Kind of. First of all, we actually went to each of these cities. It wasn't just a survey. We actually interviewed investigators and interviewed an extensive number of people there. And again, some of the things that they did, for example, a lot of their homicides are gang homicides. San Diego, as well as some of our other cities, they said, if we got a gang homicide, we need to bring gang investigators in on our homicide investigation team because they know the gangs. We saw the same thing in, for example, Richmond, Virginia. It was very important to bring these folks in. In Denver, for example, they found that a number of gang homicides and drive-by shootings were done in stolen cars. So they added an auto theft investigator to the homicide investigation team because they had more expertise in that. So while historically we've always said that looked at the lead homicide investigator as this dogged gumshoe who tracks down every lead, what our study found was the successful agencies, that's not the case anymore. They're more information managers. They rely on analysis of information. They share resources, and they work with other units.
Including the community.
Oh, the community is absolutely key. And again, I go back to the two agencies that we did that were so unsuccessful in clearing homicide. Their clearance rates were both of them around 12%. And so we ask them, did you do a canvas of the community, which is of the neighborhood, which is very common after a homicide to go out and just start knocking on doors to see people, see what people saw, if anything. And these two jurisdictions, they said, no, we didn't do that. We ask them why. They go, people never tell us anything. In all of our cities in our studies, in cities and counties in our study, they went, oh, absolutely. And it's very successful because they had established a solid relationship over a long period with their communities through community policing. They knew they had support from the community for the police, and it was a much more open communication. So it really made a difference.
Well, distrust of authority is often a theme in impoverished parts of our country. That seems to be the first battle, is winning hearts and minds and getting people mm-hmm. in the community to trust in the police, wanting to help them, wanting to be part of the solution.
Yep. There's no doubt about it, but that's something that doesn't come naturally. It has to be nurtured, and it has to be consistent to be sustained. Because if the police have a problem and they don't respond to communities, it's hard to work back from that lost ground. So it's got to be a proactive, sustained element by all components of the police department.
One of the findings in your study about these seven cities found that having a fully staffed homicide squad working both day and night, it would stand to reason, seemed to create faster response times. So much of this, though, comes down to staffing and funding. I don't know how many police departments in this country, mm-hmm. probably all of them, struggle with staffing and funding.
What we found, oddly enough, was, and there's some quirks here, that there are jurisdictions who would only staff their homicide unit during the day. That was their regular shift. So you had a homicide at night, then everyone is coming out and has to work overtime.
And is there a greater propensity for homicides at night versus
oh, yeah.
the day?
Oh, yeah, night and midnight. Obviously they occur during the day, but night certainly there's probably a higher proportion. So why would they do this? Officers want the overtime. I mean, it's really that simple, and it's convenient. They want to work days, they want to work 5 days a week, so anything on the weekends and nights is overtime. And we found one community that was super prevalent at. So having a day and night shift make with overlap on weekends, at least on Saturdays, those types of things, it not only increases response time, but frankly, really cuts your cost quite a bit.
So at this point, Dr. Carter, what do you hope or expect will come from your study? I imagine the best scenario is for departments around the country to start looking at this and saying, hey, there's a good point. We'll try that.
We've actually had that happen quite a bit. Already, we gave a presentation on the study at the International Association of Chiefs of Police meeting that we've had had a huge turnout at. I'm going to Wilmington, Delaware, in a little over a week for the Violence Reduction Network to do a presentation on this. As we have two or three others scheduled, we've done webinars for the Department of Justice on this, and so basically, what we're trying to do is share what we learned. Because it's practical, it's inexpensive, And we can demonstrate that it works. I mean, we have evidence that it works. And as a result of that, we've met virtually no resistance. I mean, there's a lot of agencies that said, yeah, we're going to try some of these things. Not everything will be implemented, but we're going to try some of these things.
Dr. David Carter, a professor in the School of Criminal Justice and director of the Intelligence Program at Michigan State University, former Kansas City police officer, who has just co-authored a study with his son about the clearance rates for unsolved murders in certain select cities across the country. Dr. Carter, thank you for explaining this to me, and best of luck with this research.
Okay, thank you very much.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.